Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Filled
Film
Conversation.
Hooray!
Hey, so it's podcast time, and it's a film podcast where we talk about a film in spoiler-filled details. So if you don't like spoilers, grow up. What, you can't watch a film if you know a little bit about it? God, you're so childish. Well, yeah, we're going to spoil it all, but I mean, who can't watch a film they've heard someone talk about? I mean, really. You make me sick. You make me sick. I am Richard Nicholas. Hello. With me is Anthony.
Hello.
And Abby.
Hello.
And the film this week is Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag. It was Abby's pick, wasn't it?
It was.
So you can explain that after you've given a hint as to... Well, more than a hint. Actually say who made it and who's in it.
Surely the title alone explains everything you need to know about why we wanted to watch it.
The title is the reason to watch, and Joe Pesci is the reason to stay. But please, give us the details so that people don't have to scroll through the internet and look it up themselves.
Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag is a comedy crime movie from 1997... written and directed by Tom Schulman, starring Joe Pesci, Andy Cummo, and Christy Swanson.
Is it really Christy Swanson?
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Good. We've established that then.
Moving on.
It also features David Spade, for any David Spade fans, which, you know, there can't be that many, but he must have enough to make a living off of it. I like him. You know, he's an okay stand-up and quite a funny comedy man, and I'm kind of not selling him that much by saying he's an okay stand-up.
Put the shovel down.
I will say that in this, David Spade is tolerable.
Oh, I think he's more than that. I think he's one of the funnier parts of it, actually.
Well yes, I'll give it that, but I mean, like, in more general terms of David Spade, not just in this film.
He divides people, but I think he's enough of a name to need mentioning in our credits.
True.
So anyway, we've lingered on Spade and put the shovel... I've put the shovel of Spade shovel down. I've picked up the Spade shovel again and started digging around, and I'm scared. I've lost in a metaphor, guys. Can you help me?
Okay, I'm going to grab the David Spade shovel off you and hit you over the head with it.
Wobong! Right, okay. Point is, if you haven't checked out the film, tough, we're carrying on. No, you can pause. That's the thing, listener. I'm going to let you into a secret. If ever you're listening to something and you think, oh, I want to check that out before I watch more, pause it. 9 times out of 10 you can pause it, unless it's a real person. You know, TV these days, you can pause. You're probably watching it online. Get hold of it, watch it, come back, press play, or reopen the page and press play again and fast forward to this bit where I... The point is, watch the film, then listen to us bang on about it, and then join in with a comment. That's all the listener advice you're getting for now. Back to my friends. Friends, let's talk about the film and our expectations before we watch the film ourselves. Abby, you picked it. Why and what were you expecting?
It was fate. I had some time to kill before work, so I went into CEX, which is a sort of... It's a pawn shop, essentially.
When you say the shop is called CEX and it's a pawn shop, it's very much like you're saying the shop is called sex and it is a pornography shop.
No, I mean the other kind, the pawn.
Pawn.
It's a pre-owned DVD store and gadgets and that, isn't it?
Yeah. And I was just killing some time, and I was looking through the shelves at DVDs like I usually do, and I saw Joe Pesci in a film called Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag. And I really didn't need to know any more than that in order to buy it and take it home with me.
Yeah, you see the title, you pick it up, you wander over to the cashier at CEX, where if you're listening, you can send us some, you know, free second-hand PS3 games, or, you know, do you want anything, Anthony, from CEX, the shop you can trust for your second-hand goods?
Well, I might like some new some second-hand cameras, perhaps? Or tablets, mobile phones, who knows?
We'll accept anything. Box sets of The Wire. You know, there must be bits hanging around that you guys could send to us as a sponsorship, because we've spent enough time on you. And David Spade. If you've got any David Spade DVDs do you want to send for us, basically saying you're an okay stand-up and occasionally funny, feel free. Anyway, I feel like I can't get on with the show today, so you guys are going to have to help me out. Anthony, what was your expectation? Had you seen this before?
Yes, this is a weird one when it came up in topic among us. This is one I'd seen a long time ago. Probably when I shouldn't, when I was rather young, I'm guessing about like between 9 and 10, something like that.
Yeah, because this is an R.
And it kind of like, when it was brought up again, only then did I realize the kind of lasting impression it had on me, how the mere mention of the name just brought the whole film back to me. And I just remember at that young age enjoying the kind of crude comedy that it was.
Yeah, just because it's for, just because it's got a mature certificate doesn't mean it's for a mature person. So, no. Yeah. And Abby basically went, bleh, and I was like, yes. I like a bit of Pesci, and I like the sound of 8 heads in a duffel bag. So that was enough, really. I mean, Pesci, he's not on enough things. I mean, what? He's got Home Alone, a bunch of Scorsese's, a few Lethal Weapon sequels that are a bit suspect, and then after that, you know, slim pickings for good films.
He just disappears.
Yeah. So, we've all watched it now, and rewatched it for you, Anthony.
Indeed.
So, you know, where do we begin, really? The main character is the kind of Tom Hanks, Shia LaBeouf crossbreed, I'd say.
Yeah. I don't really know what to say about him.
he's one of those things, with the exception of Shia LaBeouf, people don't really look like him anymore in movies.
Sure, well, this guy doesn't look exactly like him. He just, it's if you take some of the, you know, I mean, Tom Hanks is all good. There's no crossbreeding you can do with Tom Hanks and get bad stuff. The man is the nicest guy in mm-hmm. seemingly in real life, but more importantly in his films where that is that window to Tom Hanks. And he's great. So anything you mix with someone else is going to be partly positive. However, a candidate like Shia LaBeouf, difficult. So I don't think he's an overly... Well, it isn't... First of all, let's ditch those two actors' names. That isn't the guy. He's got a name. What was it?
Andy. I'm not sure how to say his last name.
Yes, the fictional guy is called Andy. The actor's name is...
No, the actor's name is Andy. Oh. I can't pronounce his last name. The character's name is Charlie.
Andy Cormier?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Well, let's just call him Andy for short. Andy... He's not the most charismatic lead, but he makes a buffoon of himself, and he seems up for being a silly lead character.
He does try very hard.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll give him a pass. There's a lot of problems with this film, but there are some good bits, and I'm not sure the lead man is the best part of it. You know?
No, definitely not. I mean, the star attraction of the film is Joe Pesci. And he really sells it. He's fun to watch all the way through. Mm. But the thing is, it's not all based around his character.
No. It's quite an ensemble piece, really. There's a large kind of sort of family at the centre of it, and like hotel staff, and sort of partially there's gangsters involved. I mean, it's quite a little ensemble farce, really. And it's about Joe Pesci's heads in a bag. I guess we should talk about Joe Pesci, because... Even though he's not the main character, he is the significant other character, so... He's playing his usual sort of small angry gangster.
Yeah, he's playing Joe Pesci, the kind of typical Joe Pesci, but saying that, it's pretty cool. You know what it is, and that's why you're here, let's be honest.
Yeah, he was typecast for a reason, because he's damn good at being a short, angry mafia guy. And in this, he's mostly calm. I mean, he bludgeons a lot of phones and kind of... tortures a couple of medical students, but, I mean, he throws a granny off a cliff, but I think this is a calm Joe Pesci compared to some of the other roles he's in, you know? He's level-headed, seeing as the main plot contrivance is that he's lost his bag of heads, which are vital to him not being murdered by his presumed boss or associate of his boss or whatever, you know?
Mm.
But don't you see, Rich? This is his last job before retirement.
Isn't it always?
It came up so late in the proceedings that it was Joe Pesci's last job. It was like, really?
Yeah, they didn't have a moment at the start where they go, "Ah, my last day as a organized crime man. I hope nothing goes wrong." Like, he's basically just called in by some. I'm trying to think of the right word for non-specific mafia guys, isn't it? Some extras from Sopranos.
Goons.
Some goons have done some killing already before the film began. They have some heads that need delivering to prove that they've killed the right men. And Joe Pesci is the guy to take it on the plane, which seems like a bad idea, really. I mean, from the get-go, you kind of go, would you take heads on a plane? I mean, just you're going to get a rental car, aren't you? That's the obvious thing. Or maybe the train at best. How would you guys transport 8 heads in a bag?
I'm not 100% how far he had to go.
Yeah, we're not great with our American geography.
No, but I mean, because he didn't get there, I don't know where he was going.
Yeah. Hmm. Still, though, I mean, his technique was interesting. We'll skip about. There's no point. There's so many little bits and little gags throughout. We won't worry about telling the listener everything that happens, because they should check it out. It is a silly one.
I think if I could drive, I would drive. And then it would be more like Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia.
Yeah, which we've done a podcast for. You can check that out. But yeah, Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia is made easier by being one head and in Mexico, where he doesn't have to cross, you know, borders particularly. Or maybe he does. Hmm. But either way, when you've got 8 bags... Oh, sorry, 8... But anyway, when you've got 8 heads in a bag, Joe Pesci's way of dealing with it anyway is to slip a gun in the pocket of the person in front of you in the airport you know, the bit where you go through security. And then everyone's freaking out that she has a gun on her. And he just slides his bag of heads across the ground and picks them up like he's just, you know, rubbernecking and walks out casually to the plane. Does that make sense?
Not the most well thought out plan, but it ends up working, I guess.
The thing that lets him down is instead of checking it in the regular cargo area, he decides to take it on and it's clearly too big. That's the thing, the first impression we get of Joe Pesci, he's a bit of a git. And he's took this bag on, he inconveniences the Shia LaBeouf-looking character that we've mentioned by making him take his presents out of the overhead storage. He's not even willing when emergency organs are brought on the plane. That's a weird thing to say. But some emergency packages come on the plane. He's not willing for his bag, which indeed he should be concerned with his bag. But he's a git about it, and he won't let the ambulance medical paramedic guy store his... It's a weird scene, and I'm finding it hard to explain it all. But he's a git.
Well, that's what the scene's got to set up. It's kind of like, Joe Pesci's a git, but we must also move the plot along by many contrivances, and this will be our first, where we put it in a situation where the bags can get switched.
Yeah.
It's all very going through the motions, it felt, for a kind of Joe Pesci film. It's like, we've got Joe Pesci, so let's write him kind of as a douchebag.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do that for 2 minutes.
What I liked is it's the first chance the kind of central characters get to meet. And they meet on the plane. They don't get on because, you know, Joe Pesci's a git and the other guy's kind of a wet blanket. And indeed gets his actual blanket stolen from him. And the guy apologises and says, look, we've got off on the wrong foot. He tries to make Joe Pesci friends because, you know, he's a bit of a scary dude. And then he goes too far and starts trying to talk to him. And I just thought, no, that's it. I'd lose my rag with you if you just started making chit-chat with me on the plane and I looked like I didn't want to.
Especially if it's really expository stuff, like he was saying.
I'm going to my girlfriend's parents, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. Hi, my name is this. I'm going to do this. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, no one...
It just felt really awkward.
just a bad move on his part. I mean, he was an irritating guy back to Joe Pesci, and, you know, that's just, no. But, like you say, it's all a big contrivance so that, oh no, Joe Pesci has taken the bag full of this guy. It just so happens the guy next to him that he's met, it was his bag of, you know, laundry, not laundry, just clothes and luggage that he's taken. And wouldn't you know it, the heads have gone to the wrong place and have ended up with this guy, and he's took him to where he's staying. So our main man, Shia LaBeouf Light, he has the bag of heads. He's taking it to meet his girlfriend, who he's staying with for the holidays in Mexico, to meet her parents for the first time. And they're a big part of the farce, really, aren't they? Her family.
Yes.
They are. In a way that has been done, but doesn't get done very often.
How many times do you have a farce about heads in a bag?
Exactly. There were some good turns as well, because both Diane Cannon and... Oh, give me a minute. It's something Hamilton. I know it is. George Hamilton. They both do good turns. They don't have a whole lot to do, but what they do, they do well.
I particularly like Diane Cannon's first reaction to seeing the heads.
Like swinging the minibar and trying to shovel down a bunch of tablets. Yeah. Yeah, essentially we've got fairly stereotypical yuppie-ish parents, I guess. The dad's a kind of dislikable... I don't know what word to use. He's sort of a businessman, but he's got that sort of lame tan, and he's a bit of a... He's just not very nice because he's sort of judgmental and sort of looks down upon the new potential son-in-law, doesn't he? Mm. And the sort of vacuous wife who's a recovering alcoholic, who obviously is driven to alcohol almost straight away by the circumstances. Like, they kind of telegraph it, but... And then the thing that wound me up a bit was the fiance of this guy who they're staying with. She wants to break up with him, basically because, you know, she's had a bit of time away from him and stuff, and kind of gone, I want to break up, and like she gives the most obnoxious, like sort of they have the most obnoxious attempt at a breakup, don't they? Do you remember the scene where she sort of is just horrible about it, just really like
I'm in two minds about that scene. At first, it was kind of, like, interesting, because I'd never seen this kind of dynamic before. Like, you know, your main guy turns up, and then his love interest is just like, well, no. So I thought that could have been, like, quite an interesting thing that they could have played during the film. But as it turns out, on the other hand, they don't really go with it that much.
Yeah, they kind of... It's the story of... their relationship not ending because of the ridiculous circumstances. But it is just that... The way she's like, yeah, well, I decided I wanted to ditch you, but I let you think you could come on the holiday because you kind of misunderstood me saying I'm going on holiday with my parents as we're going on holiday, and now that you're here, I figured I'd just have an awkward conversation with you. And but that doesn't get to happen because things get way out of hand because of the bag of heads. I like that they got on with it. They didn't have a lot of suspense of will they, won't they find out about the bag full of heads. They actually, the mum decides to leave a little discreet present for the young man and then unzips his bag to put it in there and is surprised by what she finds, as everyone would be. Oops.
For a film like this, a farce, where you have to have like all these contrivances, this film kind of, on the whole, kind of is a more understated than most farces, where they would just be ridiculously over the top.
Yeah, there's ridiculous things that happen, but the things when people find out about stuff, it is a little, I don't know, there's a lot of ridiculous moments, actually, that I think about it.
It's kind of, the whole film is kind of a little bit too real to be a farce. I don't know if you quite understand, but if it was more over the top and more overblown with its kind of, with its gimmick, I think it would have worked a bit more.
I get what you mean, yeah.
But it's rather downplayed and kind of rather realistic, and it's kind of, well, I can kind of see that happening, if you know what I mean, and that's not kind of really what you want from a farce.
There's The only other film I can think of where they're trying very hard to hide something very obvious is The Birdcage.
Yeah.
And that pictures it just about right, where everything that is happening could happen, but so wouldn't happen.
Mm.
Whereas in this, it was like, well, all this stuff could happen if you were really unlucky, which isn't the same.
I think the pivotal moment is, okay, so the mum sees the heads, she freaks out, she's sloshing back alcohol and taking pills and stuff, so she's kind of knocked out for a bit, conveniently. And it means that the dad and the girlfriend at least don't find out initially. And I think the point comes where he decides not to just call the police and report what happened. I mean, that's always the thing. People in films never call the police and just explain their ridiculous situation. They decide they have to try and cover it up by binning the heads and saying nothing. And again, I think maybe they could have binned the heads. Like, if this happened to you, you might go, I'm just ditching the bag and trying to forget about it. But there is a pivotal moment where you kind of go, okay, this is too much, this is ridiculous, and it happens just kind of, you know, it just sort of happens as it gets more and more ludicrous, doesn't it?
Mm.
But I think there are a lot of silly things that happen, and it isn't that believable and realistic, but it does, you're right, tonally, it doesn't commit to really stupid, at least for a while.
Yeah.
But then the mum does decide to dive over the table and sort of spear him when she's freaking out and awake again.
Well, that's it. The movie hasn't really started until this point.
I guess.
It's like, it's really waited until the reveal of the head to really get started and grab your attention.
Yeah. But basically, you know, they're all trying to carry on as normal. At some point, the guy discovers his bag is... No, has he discovered the bag is full of heads at this point?
Not yet. He discovers it when he and the father are using the phone in his room, and he empties them all up into bed, not knowing that they are heads.
That's right. That's right. They're just little grey bags. I was surprised they could fit 8 heads in the bag. You see it and you go, "There's no way there's 8 heads in there." But then they kind of prove it to you by having physically showing you the heads all plop out in their little grey bags.
Yeah.
Did you think the bag looked big enough, guys? Just from looking at it on the outside, it doesn't look like it could contain 8.
No, I think you're right. It seems quite small.
But then humans have a very skewed notion of how big body parts are because of the way that our brain interprets our bodies from the inside.
Plus, a head is hardly ever, you know, they're usually attached to a body, so...
Yeah.
Either way, the farce gets kind of rolling once he discovers and goes, what am I going to do? I can't just go to the police. They'll think I'm a crazy psychopath. And it's like, I guess they might, but you probably should go to the police. But it's Mexico, and they kind of throw it away. We just have to ditch the heads now. And he tells his girlfriend, she freaks out, but she kind of... Another weird thing that makes no sense. I've just remembered a thing. When the girlfriend finds out, and he kind of shows her and tells her what's going on, she freaks out. And then she's screaming. And when the staff of the hotel come in,
oh yeah,
he's sort of holding her mouth while she screams and trying to force her head to say yes or no and wave and stuff. It's like, at what point does the hotelier here not realise that the woman is trying to scream for help?
They know her family from before.
Yeah.
And if the mum's anything to go by, she can be quite frantic herself. So maybe the father has had some actual similar situations like that before. So now they just let that family get on with it and try not to get involved.
And the hotel staff have seen he's a bit odd because, you know, when he was making weird noises and they come in and see if he's all right, he's like, oh, it's ants or I've eaten a pepper. Please, little dog, don't eat the head. Oh, there's no bags of heads on my bed. Oh, it's a pepper. I've eaten a strange pepper, but I'm okay. Don't come in and do anything. Like, he gives the most terrible, like, excuses ever. And just awful. Like, so he's been so weird, I'm saying. Like, maybe they're just like, yeah, whatever. These people are weird, so we let them alone. But that's me
giving... As long
as
they pay for the room, it's fine.
Yeah, I guess. It's like, whatever. But anyway, let's not excuse the film just yet. There's more to talk about. So basically, the mum comes to, she gets a sort of decorative sword that she finds on a wall, and comes down to try and protect her family, freaks out, spears the guy, gets food all over them, and then is passed out again?
Yeah, and then they blame the whole situation on her alcoholism then, rather than believing her about human heads.
Yeah. And then the strange thing is that they kind of try and carry on with this holiday, despite it going really bad so far. And the first thing is to ditch the heads. You just can't get rid of these heads, it seems, unless you don't want to, and then they seem to go missing of their own accord. But basically, he's trying to hide the bag and deal with it whenever he can, while keeping up the meeting the parents holiday, isn't it?
Yeah, and then you have all the classics, the misunderstandings and the other things that happened.
Yeah, all the classic.
Guy leaves heads in a basket, heads get laundered, blind lady doesn't realise their heads and washes them. Classic stuff. You're right, though, it is a kind of... The typical behaviour you'd expect of a farce goes on, and people try and keep up on appearances instead of dealing with the situation at hand. And the maids do end up taking the bag of heads. They go. One of them goes through the wash. He seems to lose one. Meanwhile, while, you know, family farce goes on, Joe Pesci is using the information he has about the guy. He has, like, a script or something?
Yeah, he has his name.
So he's trying to track down the guy whose luggage he has instead of, you know, the stuff. And he has figured out that he's a university student, and so he's going to travel to the university and see if he can get more leads, basically. It's for him, it's a sort of gangster noir film where he's just trying to track down his important heads. Got to think of the word. So, like, he's sort of investigating that, and it leads him to the university, where he's already spoken to David Spade's character on the phone, isn't he? And it's quite a funny kind of back and forth, like David Spade's his usual sort of sarcastic and funny self, I guess.
Not so much that he's totally annoying and you can't watch him.
Yeah, at times he's sort
Which is your usual David Spade.
Yeah, maybe. Like, you know, I think there's times where it works. Like, I kind of like David Spade in Just Shoot Me, the TV series comedy thing.
I quite like him in that as well. But then I haven't seen that much David Spade, so maybe he hasn't worn thin on me yet.
He's teamed up with Chris Farley a bunch of times, and sometimes that's a bit too much, like, when they're together. I don't know. Let's not worry about it. But they introduce the fact that Joe Pesci's going to be going and basically torturing these two medical student roommates that the guy has to find out what they know. And they're not that helpful. They know he's on holiday, but they don't know where. So Joe Pesci takes them hostage and makes them phone up people and find out where this guy is at, isn't it, basically?
Yeah. And whilst this is kind of one of the more funnier parts of the film, it kind of feels a bit too long.
He spends too much time just with them, sitting there.
Yeah.
And, like, get on with it, guys. And David Spade has quite comical conversations on the phone, just like, just having a chat with whoever's, like, mum he's talking to for a bit long and just nattering away. And the other guy's kind of freaking out. I kind of like the sort of slightly balding guy, the other roommate as well. Does anyone know who he is?
Todd Luizzo, he's definitely in High Fidelity.
Yeah, he's the non-Jack Black or John Cusack guy in the shop. He's good in that, and likeable, and, you know, he appears in the odd comedy here and there, I think. And
he gets around.
Yeah, he's sort of a more nervous guy. I mean, you would be nervous. If Joe Pesci turned up and was holding a gun, you'd be like... Yeah, I'm scared. Fair enough. Although, he'd probably be a bit starstruck if it was Joe Pesci instead of a character he was playing. But either way, they're dealing with him. They have a little bit of comedy about that. And, I don't know, should we deal with that side of things first and then get back to what they've got up to in the stupid hotel? What bit should we tell the story of first?
I think we do need to talk about the relationship between Joe Pesci and the two med students. Steve and Ernie.
Ernie.
And how it's an interesting little dynamic. It helps the movie jog along quite nicely.
It does. It's the bit I like the most is when the three of them are kind of going about on their misadventures. Because not only are they trying to locate him, but they kind of, when they do speak to him on the phone, they have that moment of like, what do you mean you've lost one of the heads? Because, you know, our man Charlie has managed to actually lose a head, which is, you know, you either get rid of them all, or you hold on to those heads, you know, like, but basically, he's lost a head, and then, rightfully, Pesci is angry, but is trying to deal with it, and they have the problem of needing to replace one of the heads, not knowing who it is, and then also then get to where Charlie is and meet him, and that's kind of where the medical students come into their own, I think.
Yeah, it starts to become this sort of collector's movie, doesn't sound right. But they start going around campus, they go down to the cryogenics where they keep the bodies that they do experiments on in the university. They go fishing for heads, essentially. And that is a macabre and interesting bit.
I think on the part of David Spade's character, it's a good suggestion. Like, that he's like, wait, we're on a medical campus, we have a cryogenics lab, you can get a replacement head. You don't need to kill, like, our professors and get lookalikes. Just, you know, calm down. Don't break any more things, Pesci. Chill. You've broken two phones and three, like, frames of pictures. Chill out. We'll get some heads for you. It's fine. We've got this. And they do. They kind of go to the cryogenics lab and start window shopping for heads. You know, as you do when you're in that kind of situation. What did you guys make of the fact that Joe Pesci's trying to get lookalikes? Did you enjoy that kind of idea?
Yes, you know, it was a fun idea, but it's still kind of tacked on to the opening scene where he's torturing them for information. I just feel like it goes on a bit too long, and it's kind of a weird, slower sidestep the movie takes from the kind of fast-paced, farcical action that should be happening.
Yeah, that's the thing with farce, is if you're going to do farce, it really has to belt around and get it done quite quickly. That's why not many people do it.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, because it's that a lot of people, like, they're willing to accept comedy in certain parameters, but farce is one of those ones where it's often going to be, you know, silly and fast-paced and unbelievable, and then people are less, you know, happy with giving that a try. But I think in this case, it kind of works. I'm all right with it. I don't think the pace is a problem for me. But the other side, the family side, is a lot faster. A lot more stupid things happen one after the other. I mean, it doesn't take long for them to get in all kinds of stupid trouble. I mean, like at one point, they're trying to bury the heads in the desert, and they get unnecessarily mugged by some pointless gangsters they insert for no reason. There's some Mexican hoods who turn up in the desert and rob them of their car. And it just seems like, why are these guys in it? And they make a reappearance later. And it's just so unnecessary, you know?
Yeah. No, I agree on that one.
I mean, there's...
But, you know, like, these contrivances will... Some of them are bound to be thin and loose and...
It's quite a good... You know, it's quite a good, like, callback gag later when basically he needs a rental car and it's the car that he had stolen from earlier. I thought that was quite of a nice idea.
What I quite like about that as well is that is quite cheap in terms of production.
Yeah.
Did they save some money by using the same car twice and justifying it?
Hmm. But, like, they have a lot of problems at the hotel. I mean, there's all kinds of running about, losing a head, getting it back, you know, like, it's pretty stupid. But basically, Charlie's been told to stay put. Like, they're supposed to meet up at the, like, in the same place and exchange bags and, you know, don't mess. Joe Pesci's very open about having a bag of heads. Like, he's willing to shout it in airports and just tell people straight, I want my heads back. You know, he's not worried about getting into any kind of trouble, which is a bit weird. You'd think you'd want to be a bit hush-hush. You know, it's like the Mafia are usually, like, using lots of, what's the term, like, not pseudonyms. Like, they use lots of expressions that don't quite say, you know...
Euphemisms
for all kinds of things. You know, if they're going to do a killing or some crimes going down, they'll use, like, three euphemisms rather than say it. So I'm a bit surprised at Pesci not holding back on saying what he means. But basically, they have the meet-up. And at this point, I would have thought, I'm not going to meet the guy who has a hair pack full of heads. I'm going to tell the police I'm meeting him and have, you know, the guy essentially just needs to have the police there and then they can catch Joe Pesci and take him to jail and, you know, collaborate the story a bit. Isn't it? Surely that's the thing to do. No, you guys would have just gone to the hotel. Met Pesci, be like, hey, here's your heads, it's fine.
I was thinking about it.
It all gets rather complicated because what's the reason he has it? Because the dad gets put into jail because they think he's responsible for the heads. So it kind of gets a bit convoluted as to what he needs to do in order to make everything good.
Mm. I was going to say as well that he already knows who he is and where he lives.
And
he can't really win from that situation.
Pesci has got his roommates hostage, so he's obligated to them a little bit. Mm. Yeah, there are reasons, and like you say, there are more contrived things that happen. We lose a dad and gain a mother. The mother of the dad is foreshadowed by him chatting with her on the phone and her being a horrible pain in the butt. And then she turns up once he's gone to jail and they've had to get a lawyer because he's unmistakably, you know, been seemed basically two of the heads are with his luggage now and he gets caught with them and he goes to jail for a bit. I forgot to mention that because it's kind of quick that happens and it's kind of just brushed over. They're still trying to carry on all of the family together at that point, more or less, aren't they?
The way
his mum reacts to his reaction to getting arrested is funny as well because she's so critical of him. It's like big baby screaming, rolling over so quickly. Ah, what a waste.
Yeah. It's weird how we get the mother just suddenly appear.
Yeah, I was going to say that. It's like, and yet she doesn't really do much. It pretty much she's only there for that one gag at the end.
Yeah.
Involving her.
Yeah, the family all kind of dislike her because she's horrible and kind of mean. And then she just gets chucked out of the car off a cliff by Pesci and it's all worthwhile. So it is a bit like, really? But I did like that. I was really surprised when it happens. It is really, like surprisingly funny.
But yeah, that's
funny.
The thing, but it turns out to be one of the best gags in the film.
Yeah, so it's worth it, I guess.
Yeah.
But then the thing is, Charlie decides, instead of, at the last minute, instead of handing over the heads, he's going to take them and drive away. Just ditches his family. Not ditches. Like, I didn't understand his plan. He's going to take them because why?
I think he had to take them because he couldn't really leave them in the desert where he knows there is a group of bandits who persistently rob him and his family.
But he gets robbed by them again. And then they steal the car, discover the heads and ditch them and take the keys of the car, stranding him in the car in the desert with the heads. A coyote is involved. That steals another head. Joe Pesci, meanwhile, is bumping into the family that has been left in the hotel. I don't see what the plan was there.
No, that's the thing. It's so, like, convoluted that you're kind of like, why is this happening? Why are you doing this? I don't really understand.
And we're left with essentially a large car or a minivan with Joe Pesci, his medical students he has hostage. He never really holds them hostage. He's just with them all the time. And they don't leave because they assume he'll get angry and shoot them. But he never makes them stay. I would have run off in the airport myself. Like, that would have been the opportune moment where he's making a phone call from the airport. But, you know, they've kind of banded together. They're joined by the mum and the girlfriend and briefly the grandmother before she's thrown out the car. And they're now chasing after Charlie, who is off stuck in the desert, having been robbed a second time, and is now chasing a coyote that has a head in a bag. I mean, how did we... I don't even understand how we got here.
Yeah, that is my problem too.
But, you know, that's what we ended up seeing. And at this point, Joe Pesci rightfully chases after Charlie when they find him. And they basically get talking and a plan is made that we don't hear about. The heads are returned, more or less. And then the thing that's happened that's a bit, again, a bit contrived, the mobsters that have sent Pesci on this mission and are a bit annoyed that he's delayed, and the guy who needs the heads is all angry. What's his name? Big Sepp or something?
Yeah.
So that's going, because he's taking so long, they're all concerned. So the guys, the goons that sent Pesci have now tracked him down, and he's in trouble with them, and they're going to kill him if he doesn't, you know, get the heads to the right place. And it's a bit weird, but they're after him now as well. So Pesci needs an escape plan, because, you know, he's buddies with Charlie now that the heads are back. Like, of course, do a deal with a guy who's been annoying you by taking your luggage. Yeah. So that's right, though, isn't it? Like, basically, they come up with a plan in the desert.
Yeah, but their plan didn't really seem to make sense. Because what happens is Joe Pesci drives off, and is assuming that they've arranged to meet in a certain place, which is back at the hotel at a certain point, which is like the next morning. But he leaves them there with a broken car. So I don't really see how them getting to the hotel as well was like a part of the plan, because... Well, they couldn't do it.
Yeah, it makes... But it does allow for one of the most important scenes of the whole thing. It means that they all stay in the car overnight and just sleep off the fact that they can't jumpstart the car because they can't see properly. And the bloody idiot Steve, they've got the match ready to go to see what they're doing when they hotwire the car. And he coughs and he blows out the match. What's the line Spade has to say at that point? What is it?
Well done, Steve, you... A double crooked letter.
Oh yeah, he swears is, and we shouldn't swear. It's a funny line though. I like that. I wanted to bring it up. But the point is, they are stuck in the desert. They can't hotwire the car yet because it's not day. So Pesci stays in a hotel overnight, examines all the heads, makes sure he's got the correct doppelgangers for the missing ones. He puts them all out, names them all their stupid names because there was a bit of a gag earlier about their names and the confusion. And then goes to sleep with the mafia guys outside, watching like it's The Wire with like binoculars, but really close, really suspiciously from outside, and goes to sleep, doesn't he?
Not quite the thing you do if there's two gangsters outside.
I always go
wanting
to sleep.
You dead.
I always put my corpse heads on a table and go to sleep while people are watching me. That's the only way I can get 40 winks, to be honest.
But even though it doesn't make any sense, it does lead to the most remarkable scene in the film.
Can anyone describe for me, or the listener, what happens in the sequence?
The heads sing to him. They sing to him. And their zombified bodies attack him.
Through the walls of the hotel.
While singing a weird version of Mr. Sandman, but instead it's Mr. Hitman.
Or Mr. Headman? I thought it was Headman, but it could be Hitman.
I thought it was
Hitman. Mr. Hitman. Da, 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 da. Yeah. And they burst through the walls, their corpse bodies. And it's a dream. It's okay. They weren't really singing heads. And he wakes up and they get on with their ridiculous plan. Conveniently, they've hotwired the car now and they can turn up at the hotel where Pesci is having breakfast and confront and rob the mafia guys who are there to confront Pesci. why would he want the heads back again? Like, what is even the reason that they're pretending to have here?
Well, Big Sepp trusts Joe Pesci, but he thinks that the two goons are trying to double cross him in some way. So they want to take the heads back themselves in order to pacify Big Sepp. But Joe Pesci wants to do it because otherwise he won't get paid and or killed.
Yes, but why does Charlie want to then suddenly rob them?
It's just part of the plan to make everyone come out with what they want. But, so Joe Pesci gets his head and George...
But why would he want them, as far as the gangsters are concerned, he has nothing to do with it. So why would he suddenly... What the?
No, but they have to lay the blame onto someone else.
So they're just...
Now that's part of the alibi for his almost father-in-law.
Yeah.
Is that
somebody
has to be culpable for the head.
Okay, yeah. So in a way, they need the heads to free their father-in-law slash dad. That's why they're after it. But it's also all to trick the stupid bad mafia guys that we don't like, so that Joe Pesci could, you know, save his life, because, you know, they're buddies. And he's spared them and killed their grandmother that they don't like. So whatever. Basically, they get the head bag again. They get to the airport, and then in a stupid unbundling of the heads, the parcel is passed back and forth. The security are kind of confused and alerted. And because the guy hands the bag to them, because basically it works as the, like, pass the parcel rules, where whoever has it last is obviously the owner and to blame and have to open it. And therefore the security arrest only the mafia guys who have their bags back.
Yeah. And for some reason, that automatically means that a similar crime that happened days before is also due to them.
Yes. and also, meanwhile, as if to muddy the waters even more, Steve, the other medical student, who's not dealing with it as well as Spade has, like, he is slowly going crazy talking to the heads himself and has one of them and is just running around the airport, like, making everyone scared of the head that he's holding. So while that's happening, and just, like, not helping in any way. And meanwhile, Joe Pesci gets his old slide-the-bag-across-the-floor trick to happen, gets on the new plane, puts the luggage correctly in the back of the plane, and we presume gets them back to Big Sep on time and doesn't get his head chopped off.
As is confirmed in the closing credits.
Indeed. He gets to have, you know,
these Hawaiian drinks.
Yeah.
On a beach somewhere. Also, it reveals that the mother is still alive, which I thought was a bit of a...
The grandmother thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Because she was definitely dead.
Oh. Yeah. It's not funny now that she's not dead, if you know what
it
I mean.
It takes away a bit of the joke. Like, the joke would have been all the more funny if she had just been murdered.
Mm.
But yeah, they kind of do that classic end credits. What are they all doing now? Like, they got married happily. The dad had a weird tattoo in prison on his head. The mum is just at the wedding. Hey. And the grandmother is alive, if in many, you know, in a classic, she has to be in a weird full body cast or whatever it was.
Yeah.
What else? Who else? Oh, one of the two medical students is a doctor now, while the other one is in an asylum, but at the wedding. Like, so it's just, hooray, everyone mostly lived happily ever after, I guess. And it just sort of pats its hands together and says, done! Like, there you go, you've had a comedy, now go home. Like, that's kind of the attitude the film seems to end on. Like, job well done, everyone. So,
I guess, yeah, just to sum it up now, isn't it? It's just, I guess overall, it's just kind of an average farce. There's nothing, it doesn't really give anything new to the genre. It doesn't really play with its conceit of, like, the eight heads as much as you think it will from the title and from Joe Pesci. And what I was looking forward to seeing is kind of more of the mesh between this Joe Pesci character and the farce, something a little more close to Home Alone. But sure. I think they kind of keep him too separate from that for too long.
Yeah, it's more about the family side of the family discovering that he has all these heads in his luggage, rather than Joe Pesci constantly trying to run after the guy. Like, it could have been a bit more the bag. Like, enough happens. The heads stupidly get about much more than they should, but, like, maybe there should have been more one guy chasing another guy with a bag that, you know, like, I guess it could have been less of a big cast of, like, weird characters and more, like, focused on the two guys, you know. I don't know, it's hard to rewrite it, you know, like, it's so much of a silly premise you can't really worry about it too much, but perhaps
that's
you were expecting
thing.
It to be,
like,
different.
I can't really put my finger on what it is exactly that didn't quite work. But something didn't quite work. But it's got so close.
Yeah, it's not it's not like a classic farce. Like I would recommend, like, Rat Race. That's a really ridiculous but funny farce. And, like, It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, which is kind of the earlier version of like Rat Race, and there's like there are good mainstream farces. Like you mentioned, The Birdcage, a little bit less farcical, but still quite funny. It's not like a hit, but I still kind of think its heart's in the right place, and that some of the performances are really funny. So, what do you? I mean,
it's just average. Just kind of average. There's nothing. There should be something really special about it, considering it's called Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag.
Yeah, but it's just a little bit too below par to really, like, deserve anything more than, like, having it in a DVD collection and occasionally having it as a guilty pleasure, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is what we have. We have it, we own it. Abby, what do you want to sum up your thoughts? We should really think of our usual...
Severed head-related metaphors.
If it's anyone's severed head... What severed head is representative of this film? Anthony, you've had a bit of a say there. You think about what your severed head rating is. Abby, you...
I think I've got one.
Okay.
I remember a little while ago there was controversy over like a scene in the TV series Game of Thrones where they used George W. Bush's like image as a severed head on like a stake,
oh,
but
right,
then people noticed and complained, and so they had to change it.
Oh.
So that kind of weird backing down metaphor.
You had a funny idea, but you couldn't really pull it off. Yeah, that kind of works. I'm gonna try and think of a severed head metaphor while Abby gives her final thoughts and maybe can think of a severed head rating system we can use.
The film tried hard, did okay, but didn't quite hit the mark. I can't quite remember if in Monkey Island, if it's a severed head or a skull that can actually talk back to Guybrush and complain about the stuff that he's doing. There's one point where Guybrush has a choice between getting back the skull or the head or having an anchor as a prize, and he chooses the anchor, and then just the skull or head is just mocking him by going, "You chose that anchor? You're going to leave me here? You chose that anchor?" So that, but I can't quite remember if it quite fulfills the criteria.
That's all right. Don't worry yourself. It's, it makes enough sense. Oh, I've got not a lot. I keep thinking of Alfredo Garcia and his head in a bag, because in a way, Alfredo Garcia's head in Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia is less important than the story around it. His head in the bag is kind of a letdown. It has potential, but essentially it is not all that important and all that great. And this film isn't all that important or all that great. But there are some good things to come out of it. Alfredo Garcia's head gives us a good film. This film gives us some funny bits, but it isn't... It's kind of a MacGuffin movie, in a way. I sort of trying to link them, but mainly because I couldn't think of that many severed heads.
Mm-hmm.
And nor should you, really.
No. It is both George Bush's severed head that doesn't really get used. It is your Monkey Island reference, whether it was a head or not. And it's sort of Alfredo Garcia's head. And I'm sure there's another five other heads that are symbolic of this film to make up the whole eight. But we can't think of them. If you could think of symbolic heads to rate this movie as, feel free to comment on any of the ways that you comment on internet stuff. You know, Facebook, the actual website where you're presumably listening to this. I don't know if iTunes has an area for comments. Just figure it out and comment, because we'd love to hear from you, listener. That is all I have to say about that. This is a good place to end the podcast because it's at the end. Do you guys agree?
I agree, yes. Yeah.
So that leaves us only to say goodbye and happy headhunting.
Bye!
Bye!
Ta-da!